Hello, this is William Easton, your host for a revolutionary new approach to small business success, Richmond Biz Live on WLEE News Talk 990 AM. You can start by checking out our website, richmondbizlive.com, and download your program schedule. You'll find it in the resources section. 1 hour of information, techniques, and tools that you can use to achieve your dream. Clear your calendar for the most important hour in your week. And this is Richmond Biz Live, your weekly business talk radio show, broadcast live from the beautiful studios of WLEE News Talk 990 in downtown Richmond. I'm your host, William Eastman, managing partner for The Growth Works, a small business, fast growth company, and executive producer of Richmond Biz Live, today's show. So to all our listeners out there, you know the answer to the following question, but for all the newbies, why listen? Well, I'll tell you what. If you are an ongoing listener, you know that finally there is a resource here in the local Richmond area that is dedicated to your success. The city of Richmond, like a lot of cities and areas, does an excellent job of helping startups, incubators, etc., get their feet on the ground and get going. But nobody out there is designing their programming, their approach, their materials, their expertise to help those business owners who have been around for a few years, and what they're looking to do is get a payback. How do I get my money back for the years of investment and sacrifice that I put into it? Well, if that's who you are in the right spot. And all of our methods that we use here talk about how to self-finance their growth. Is that in fact, Linda Heath and I today are going to go into some examples of fast growth companies. Most of those companies did not get financing until way late in their histories. And the rule of thumb here is that if you go to financing three times, you're out, because you won't own any of the business. And so how do I grow my company? How do I sell my company? And how do I finance that out of the cigar box through sales? That's what we're doing here. Everybody that's on the show is a recognized thought leader. And what I mean by that is they are either nationally, internationally, or locally known in the areas of finance, branding, strategy, marketing, sales, productivity, technology, and people. And every one of them not only are thought leaders in their particular areas of expertise, but they're also business owners and, in fact, have done this. They have grown companies. They have sold companies. They have bought companies. And so if that's you, you are in the right spot. So how do you play? Well, you go to richmondbizlive.com. That's Richmond, BIZLIVE.com. And on the homepage, you will find you'll find three buttons. One says watch. Click the watch button, and you can catch us live on a cam here in the studio. Click listen, and you can alternatively stream the radio show right directly from the studios of WLEE, or you can join. Now, in this particular case, how do you join this show? Real simple. 844-249-5483. That's 844-249-5483 or 844-BIZ-LIVE. If it's time for your business to pay you back for the year's investment sacrifice, be here every Friday at 12:06 or stream us. So with that, let's get rolling. So where we are is that we run two tracks in this third season. We've had three seasons so far. Season number one was dedicated to those companies that were in what we call the 80% group, those companies worried about how to make money, how to break even, how to stay in business. Season two are those companies that have reached that, and now they're saying to themselves, what do we do next? What's the next act? And season three, which is the season we're in right now, is, okay, I'm at the top. I have two choices. One is to sell the business, and that was last week, and that will be next week. Or, hey, that was fun. I want to do it again because I want to make more money and I want to raise the value of my company. And that's what we're talking about this week. So in the studios is Linda Heath of Financial Holographics. Hey, Linda, how are you doing?
Hey, Bill. I am just fine. How are you?
I am rolling. I've had one of those mornings where
so I heard.
Everything was just way fast.
Too much. But up close and loud or something. Well, I'm going to flip the tables on you this week. I would like to interview you a little bit, because one of the important underpinnings to this whole program and what you've put together to make a difference for business owners is your studies about fast growth companies and the principles that apply. And I'm not sure we've really conveyed that very clearly. And if you remember, in November of 2009.
And you and I were went to D.C. That's right. We went to Reston.
For the 100th anniversary of the Virginia Society of CPAs. And you had gotten a presentation there, and you very kindly pulled me in. And I found the slides. I thought maybe you could post some of these images on the website afterwards.
Yeah, I can put the slide deck up. I can put it up in the resources. No problem.
You keep referencing the fact that it is possible to go from zero in revenue to $1 billion. I think that's mind-boggling for a lot of our listening audience. But we are targeting companies that have been very successful, and they're figuring out. And what fascinates me about your research is that there's a system for doing it. And in the slides at the very end, you had mentioned that there were three companies that started as privately owned that went from zero to a billion, and that your research had found. Well, maybe I should be letting you tell what your research found about how it happens. And we're going to use those three case studies over the next month or two, dissect it for folks so that they can begin to figure out if this is what they want to do.
Okay. Well, yeah, we just so everybody know, kind of level the playing field. We started doing research in the early part of this century, back in 2002. The company I was in got caught up in the internet bust, and I just closed the deal with the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, to use their facilities for something. And I walked out and got a phone call that we no longer had a company. And so I was scratching my head about what I was going to do. And I've always wanted to focus on small business, and I wanted to focus on growth. So I went back in the building, cut another deal at UNLV, which put me into their computer system, LexisNexis. And now it's different nowadays, but back then you couldn't get access to the type of information I needed.
That's right.
And I looked at a number of research papers that were written either as comparative studies between different companies or focused on individual companies like Starbucks. And it talked about how did these companies grow? And we spent a couple of years trying to distill out of that what were the characteristics. And so one of the interesting things we found is that if you've got a $500,000 a year business, that's all you're making, I want you to kind of suspend your judgment for a moment, because you too could be $1 billion. Right. I mean, part of this is what industry you're in, but really the other part of it is what does your heart want to do?
Right.
And so what happened with these companies is that they went through stages of growth, and then they got to the top of their growth curve where they were basically worth the most money they were worth. Well, one option, like we're talking about this season, is to sell the company. The other option is to reinvent. Now, there is no time pattern for how long it takes you from startup to reinvention.
The first one.
The company I'm working with in Southwest Virginia, it may take them 30 years to get to the first reinvention. Mm-hmm. One of the companies I looked in the study, Fastenal, which if you're in the construction industry, you know very well, it took them 70 years to get to the first reinvention. But once you reinvent once and you decide to play it out, it runs three patterns, a four pattern, a six pattern, and a 12 pattern. What I mean is you can go, it takes four reinventions to go from zero to a billion. And the real fast track companies reinvent four times over 4 years. I want you to think about AOL. AOL was not profitable until 1995. When they merged with Time Warner, financially, they were worth more than Time Warner was, and we're talking hundreds of billions of dollars. Mm-hmm. They did that in four reinventions. Some companies did it in six. Starbucks is a good example of once they got there, it took them four reinventions over 6 years to go from a $50 and $60 million company to a $1 billion company. Fastenal was the one that did it in 12 years.
Cisco
did it in four, because they were in the right industry at the right time. And if you were building networking equipment, routers that were ubiquitous. Now, of course, with this latest Sony thing, we could have a totally different conversation about that. But back in the day, back in the 90s, man, if you were Cisco, and it's interesting is Cisco did it in acquisition.
Well,
they bought 70 some odd companies out over the space of 10 years in the 1990s.
Well, I'm going to put Fastenal and Cisco on hold, because I did my research on Starbucks for this week. And I thought Starbucks would be very relatable, because everybody has probably had at least one Starbucks cup of coffee. Maybe sometimes you didn't even know it. And the story, I researched their history and I researched their financials, and thought you could talk about the reinventions, and I'll kind of tell you. They publish a very nice timeline on the internet. So it was helpful. I tried to pick out what were the reinventions that got them to that mark.
Okay, because you probably saw big jumps. In other words, you know, their growth line was going up in terms of revenue, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden it shot up huge. And so what you could see it as kind of a a sloping line with all of a sudden there's a big step. And then there's a sloping line and a big step. And that big step is that reinvention, and in coming out of it, they didn't pick up the line where they left off. They picked up that line way above wherever they were.
Exponential growth. Well, I guess let's just talk about where they started, because we're talking about these founder-owned companies. We've been talking to founder-owned companies, and there were three guys. They were adults. They all met at the University of San Francisco, and one of them had a passion for coffee and had connected with some guy in British Columbia, Vancouver, who was an expert roaster of coffee beans. And these three guys became interested and decided they wanted to roast coffee beans as well, and they were friends, and so they formed the company, and that was in 1971. In Seattle, they opened their first store after learning from Al Peet the an unusual way to roast coffee beans. And what comes out of this story, as you dig and do the research, the coffee industry in the U.S. was beginning to decline. It was beginning to shrink some. Mm-hmm. But specialty coffee was beginning to increase. And I don't know whether I doubt they did any research. I think it was their own personal passion, and that sort of goes with the advice that people are given, do what you love and the money will follow. Well, I'm not sure that always works. You have to be smart about it. But anyway, in 1982, a man named Howard Schultz joined the company. What it doesn't say, you have to go research him. He was actually a vice president of a Swedish home goods company in New York. And so they picked somebody, they brought him in for retailing and wholesaling. And part of the Starbucks coffee, we're mainly familiar with the retail side, but there was a wholesale side. So even at the very roots, there was a B2C, business to consumer, and that's the conspicuous part. But there was also this B2B, wholesaling, roasting the beans and selling it through some other outlets. And I think that gave them a lot of volume, and I think that's important. I looked at what Ben is going to talk about and the different things, and I wanted to get that on the table because I think it'll play into what he said.
Yep.
So they brought in Howard to really begin to grow things. And in 1983, this is where those serendipities come in. He happened to take a trip to Italy, and he fell in love with the Italian coffee bar.
The Italian coffee culture.
Yes, it was a culture. I didn't realize that. And it was all about having a place to go. It was that your third place. In other words, that place between home and work. That third place that you could go and do what you needed to do, and it created a sense of community. And I think that's really missing in America, in the big cities. That's what's so amazing.
It is. In fact, Howard Schultz was also greatly influenced by Kinko's. And if you are a road warrior from the last 15 or 20 years, you know that you slept many a night getting work done for your assignment the next day in Kinko's. And Kinko's, the joke at Kinko's was at 2 a.m, it's Star Wars Cantina because of the weird are hanging out at Kink's. And so he also had that kind of experience and understood that if he created a destination, Starbucks is a destination. It's not a coffee store.
Right. That is right. And that was intentional on their part.
That's right.
And so in 1980, he joined them. He travels to Italy. And in 1984, he convinces the founders. So the founders are still in the game. He convinces them to test the coffee house concept in downtown Seattle. So my thought is that might have been the first reinvention because they're testing a different concept. But I don't know. Tell me what your research.
No, I think you're right, because what a lot of the research doesn't show is that if you use the concept of Blue Ocean Strategy, and I can't think of the names now, I struggle with them. There's three types of business strategies. One is you're traditionally going to do what everybody else does, and you're going to do it a little bit better, which is an optimizer. On the other end of that is Blue Ocean. You go someplace that nobody else has been. What he did is he did the middle strategy, which is taking everything that works and kind of putting it together, only putting it together differently, such as Walmart going into food stores.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the new industry was a department store and a food store together. Neither one of those were new concepts. And that's what he did, is because he had great infrastructure because of his background. He understood the lines of distribution. Mm-hmm. He looked at how Walmart was winning the game, and Walmart is the most vertically integrated company in the world when it comes to stock. If somebody buys something off the shelf in a Walmart store, it goes all the way back to the manufacturer and says, make one.
Right. So let me run through the timeline, because I'm looking at our time, and I think we can't start this conversation and not at least get them to that $1 billion.
Yep.
So let me hit. So in 1985, Howard leaves Starbucks. I did not know this. And he forms his own Italian flavored, the coffee shop experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 1987, he acquires Starbucks from the three founders. So this is what's really interesting. From 1971 to 1984, 13 years to their first reinvention, they're still in the game. By 93 years later, second reinvention, they sell. So it's kind of intriguing, because we're talking to our founder owners about getting to a billion, but they, if they want to stay in the game, they're going to have to think differently. So he buys and consolidates his chain, his small chain, with their small chain. He paid $3.7 million. So I think for three guys who were an English teacher, a history teacher, and a writer,
they did well. They walked away with $1 million.
A million each. Yes, I guess $700,000 went to the fund, the lawyers.
Well,
and the
maybe a little bit more than that. But
anyway, then he begins to innovate, and this particular timeline on their website focuses a lot on their emphasis on making the employees as partners,
mm-hmm.
and benefits and so forth, and expanding stores. In 1992, so 21 years after it was founded, they go public. Their revenue at that point, according to their 10K. Remember a few weeks ago I told people you can go out there and read these things? I did that. So that's how I got the numbers going back. $103 million. And at that point, they had 165 stores. And if you were to take $103 million and divide it by 165, you'd say, oh my gosh, those stores are $1 million stores. But what's not showing is how much was wholesale.
That's
so they
right.
had
that's
two
right.
significant segments. Okay, let me
So what
going.
We're talking about, that was probably their second reinvention.
You think going public was? I thought it was when Howard merged too small.
Well, it's really kind of what was the potential of the company, and sometimes it's hard to see by just looking at the financials. But when they went public, typically companies that become a billion-dollar firm and do four reinventions, it's either the second or third reinvention is when
they need the big money.
That's when they need the big money.
Well, then let me tell you what happened. The next year, in 93, they opened a roasting plant. So now they're obviously scaling.
Right.
They're not roasting in stores. And by 1994, they had their first drive-through location. So they're piggybacking on all the knowledge that McDonald's had gained through the years.
Mm-hmm.
1995, they began serving Frappuccino, which is a blended beverage. They had a stock split.
Yep.
They opened another roasting facility. So I had pegged that as reinvention number four, but it might be part of that number three. They began bottling and selling Frappuccino. And Ben's going to talk about having strategic partners as part of this.
Right.
And it lists, one of the other articles talks about, they have a relationship, a strategic partner with Kraft Foods to do one thing. They have a strategic partner with Pepsi-Cola to bottle some of their specialty flavors. They have a strategic partner with an ice cream company and so forth. So
I think it's Dreyer's. Yeah.
It is. Good for you. And by 1997, they established a foundation. They were national. At that point, they were at $966.9 million in revenue. So they crossed that $1 billion mark sometime in 1998. And so that would be 27 years after they were founded. But it was really short. It was 84, 98, 14 years after that first
right.
reinvention. So I've got my reinventions wrong, because you said they were the six-year crowd. So 90,
yep.
So 92, that is
right.
when they went public. That's the reinvention.
Right. And so, the point here that Linda's hit, and she's giving you the historical record and looking at it through the eyes of a chief financial officer, is that they probably got some angel capital someplace after the first reinvention.
Mm-hmm.
But they pretty much stayed pure, and because they understood from the beginning their play was to go public. And so what they didn't do is they didn't dilute anything. And because of that, Howard never got himself forced out, because they've had some bad years.
They have. Well, he actually left for a while. I don't know why. But the guy who replaced him was forced out because of some bad earning years.
Right.
Howard's been back since the 80s.
Because he understands the business probably better than anybody else.
And I want to say one margin thing. I know we're kind of on the time. And that is, they learned a couple. They had one time where one of their reinventions involved connecting with supermarkets. And they got out of that. That was not did not work for them, because they have very high standards. And the supermarket, that particular channel, has very low margins, and they did not want to compromise on their quality. So there's that thing about sticking to your vision.
Right.
What made them different? They were specialty coffee, so you can't compromise. They wouldn't flavor their coffee beans, and they wouldn't lower their roasting standards. And so
that's right. In fact, when he went public, my guess was it was specifically to open the roasting houses. Is that they had already tested?
Because that's a manufacturing now. It's no.
He'd already tested. They already tested the model, and they knew that the store model was going to work. So all these additions, like Frappuccino and drive-in and all that, they're just extensions. So if we talk to business owners out there, it's nothing more than doing a product or service extension of what you currently do. What he needed capital investment for was to open up a new piece, because he knew he could break out if he vertically integrated. It's like if you go back to the days of Ford. One of the reasons why Ford did so well in the early part of the 20th century is that they owned the ore mines, they owned the boats, they owned steel mills, they owned the rubber, and so Ford totally integrated the operation. So not only was it cheaper, that was part of it, but Henry Ford knew exactly what he had to have, because this was a brand new industry, and it had to be done his way.
Interesting. And Howard sounds like the same kind of person. Well, thank you so much. I want to pick this up, because we've got some other stories, and I think this makes a great roadmap for our listeners.
Oh, it really does, because all it says is that you can do this. That nothing we've talked about required anything exceptional, except a business owner with a dream that is based upon reality of what the market has. But I bet you Howard won not because he was right. Howard won because he wouldn't quit. And the people that we're talking to, you haven't quit yet.
Yay.
And so if you're thinking about selling your business and you're kind of like our off weeks, don't go there yet. Because maybe where you want to go is you want to reinvent the thing. And think about this. In reinvention, you typically start adding zeros. In other words, if you're a $10 million company on the first reinvention, more than likely you're looking at $100 million on the next one. And so how would you like to go there? Okay.
Good to me, Bill. Thank
All
you.
Right.
See you in 2 weeks.
All right. So thanks, Linda.
Merry Christmas.
And we'll be back.
Hello, I'm Linda Heath, president of Financial Holographics and your chief business analyst. Our accounting and finance experts solve business mysteries for CEOs. 80% of private companies are struggling. Only 5% have it made. Where are you? Please join me in a panel of business experts at Richmond Biz Live Talk Radio on WLEE News Talk 990, sponsored by Financial Holographics, where you don't have to know what to ask for to get what you need.
As a business leader, have you developed a highly productive work environment? Do you create a work-life experience that is self-motivating, enjoyable, and rewarding for your fellow workers, vendors, suppliers, and most importantly, yourself? To navigate to a pleasurable work-life experience, which will provide the means for you to have a fantastic full life experience, contact me, Andy Schulich, for a free consultation on the web at metamorphosismc.com.
And we're back. This is Richmond Biz Live, richmondbizlive.com. 844-249-5483. That's 844-249-5483. So we just had a great session with Linda, and Linda was talking about this whole idea of reinvention and how long does it take. And I got to tell you is that when you look at the data, the way that the data was originally put together, it was a scattergraph. We looked at companies as they went through reinventions and how many years did it take for 1, 2, 3, 4. And we created a zero line for revenue and a $1 billion line for revenue, just as an arbitrary number. And everything clustered around a 4 line, a 6 line, or a 12 line. Now, there were outliers out there, but we can say that at least 2/3 of them fell into that pattern. So I want you to think about that your business idea could be a $1 billion business. But in order to do that, you have to be like Starbucks in a way, in terms of you have to go someplace that people haven't been. And you got to bring out products and services that nobody has seen before. And you've got to become a leader at that. You got to consistently do it, because once they're in, you got to keep them. And so with that, the expert on that particular topic is Andy Schulich from Metamorphosis Management Consulting. Hey, how you doing, Andy?
Doing lovely today. Getting ready for Christmas. How about you?
I'll start thinking about Christmas this afternoon.
Well, it's very interesting about what was discussed there, because to be that type of person, to grow, you can't get complacent. You have to be continuously imaginative and seeking the next step and not being complacent. So it's very, very important. So in today's show, we want to focus on being the first to introduce new products or services to the marketplace. And the question is this a good business move or a bad move? And what are some of the advantages and disadvantages in doing this? What actions are necessary to make this a very positive decision? And what have successful companies done in the past? First of all, being the first to introduce something new can create a huge market dominance for the company that does the introduction. Or it could be no impact if nobody buys the product, and it could then lead to a negative impact for the business because many things have to take place before something is introduced. Some of the advantages of being first are there's a lack of or no product competition. You're solely it. You are the only supplier initially. If the marketplace promotes the product, which means they buy into it or service, competition will probably then start up very quickly because they see that there's room to make profit here. I guess a good example of that was when Apple came out with the first PC. You know, the techies jumped on it right away.
Oh, man, I remember that, don't you?
Yeah. Unfortunately, way back in the Stone Ages.
What was it, Mac 2s?
Yeah. No.
Oh, Apple II.
It was Apple II.
Apple II.
Then the Mac came out.
Then the Mac came out.
It was the next version.
That's right.
And but that was interesting because that really started the ball rolling on PCs. And look at where we are today with our phones. If the product is very desirable, the company will develop a name recognition. You know, if I say to you, let's go get a soft drink, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Coke.
Coca-Cola, that's right. You know, and you may not drink Coca-Cola, but it just is in your mind.
In fact, I don't. I'll say Coke, and what I really meant was Pepsi, not that I drank either, but
yeah,
I drank Pepsi over Coke.
Right. And the first movers, the initial purchasers of a product, will establish the mindset for the future purchasers, possibly creating product improvements, support guidelines, and future development concepts.
And one more thing I want to add to Andy's list before he talks about some of the disadvantages, and that is the free publicity, is that the publicity, and we'll go back to Apple because I think everybody, regardless of your what you own, recognizes Apple for some superior product development, is that when a new Apple product comes out, they don't have to advertise.
No.
All of the news stations are down there watching people stand in line to get a phone.
That's right.
And so if you're first to market and you have that reputation and you announce you're going to do something, all you have to do is send out a press release. And the media will take care of tens of millions of dollars worth of advertising you couldn't buy.
That's true. Yeah. And then with our other media, the Twitter and Facebook and all that, I mean, it just spreads like wildfire.
It does.
So what are some of the disadvantages if you're a first? Well, the purchasers do not know the value of obtaining or using the new product, so the business must educate the potential purchasers on the value and the uses of the product. A huge expenditure may be incurred in the market research and development of the product by the initial developer. The competitors, on the other hand, they can re-engineer the product, take it apart.
Yep.
And thus do it much less cost. And therefore, when they develop it, they have less upfront money spent. Therefore, they can provide a lower selling cost.
Think about the first Ford Taurus. That's exactly what they did. They bought all of the Japanese and German cars, tore them apart, and said, I want a better car part by part. And Ford came out with the Taurus and saved them.
Wow. Some competitors may develop cheap knockoffs where they only provide like 80% of the functionality. And so the businesses, when you come out with your product, must be able to prove the value of the product and maintain in order to grow market volume. If it is very successful, being able to meet the unit demand of the customer may be an issue, but that's a good issue. And you related to the Apple situation. That's exactly what happened to them.
Yeah, because I'm not so sure that is almost a forecasting nightmare and not a manufacturing one, because,
correct,
you know, if we built the capacity, as you've talked about,
yeah,
we can make as many as you want. The question is how to forecast how many do I need to make?
Right.
And how many do I need to have in inventory someplace, some warehouse, so they're not waiting a week for us to get it built?
Yeah, and if you do have that loyal following, they may overlook it. But if you're brand new on the market and you can't provide the product, that could be detrimental to your company's image.
Yeah, and again, it could be the greatest product ever made.
Oh, yeah.
And you make a wrong decision on forecasting, and it takes off, and you don't have them. And so somebody steps in, or you make too many, they don't sell as fast as you thought, now you're broke.
That's right. You know, so in order to be successful, what do you have to go ahead and really engage with? Being first to the market and becoming the market leader establishes a mindset in the customer. Maintaining product quality, service, and value will help to maintain this leadership position. Developing a value-added product very quickly, and I stress quickly, that provides functionality and is good for the customer, is a relationship builder. Develop a future product that is based on the customer's feedback from the first product, which provides much greater value than the competitor's product that's on the market at that time, is very important. Being first to establish a product will aid in developing a generic product name. Just think, if you need to go make a copy of something, a piece of paper, most people say, I got to get a Xerox copy of that.
Yep.
You know, and that name Xerox, and I know they're not the key providers in the copying world today, because there are other ones that stepped up. Having a process that has a short period of time from conception of an idea to product delivery in the marketplace is very important in establishing the maximum solo entry market time before a competitor is able to enter the market.
And you and I talked about that part of the success of why Chrysler was the hottest car in the early 1990s was that they had worked on quality to get platform times down to the least in the industry, platform time being from concept to it's rolling off the factory floor. And they got to 17 months. And so what they could do is they could for every three products General Motors could turn out, they could turn out four. Or every two products General Motors turned out, they could turn out three.
Right. So, you know, a key component of success is marketing research. And some of these items we discussed in the past, but let's look at them again because they're very important. What is your target market? You can't produce a product to have everybody in the world to buy it unless it's a cell phone.
Yeah.
Will the product provide value and be purchased? Do you have any competitors? How long will it take a competitor to develop a competitive product? What is the unique selling proposition? Very important there. What are the market sale projections, growth curve, and life cycle of that product? What is the market pricing structure, as we discussed in previous shows?
Right.
What should the test market be? What educational, and I'm looking from a marketing program here, programs are needed to introduce the product to the customers? And an example of this, I think, is Little Giant Ladder. If you go on to the TV, they have multiple channels. They have TV programs where they are showing you how to use all the functionality of that little ladder and where it can be used compared to somebody else's ladder. Can the product be produce extensions, be developed to meet future involvement needs? You know, speed of change of response.
Mm-hmm.
Using Little Giant again, they're in their second generation, and from their marketing analysis, they now use a lighter and stronger material, metal. Right. It's supposed to be some aeronautical type right. material. They use put rollers on the bottom of it so you can roll it around, move it easy. You don't have to lift it all the time. Easy locking mechanisms, auxiliary attachments. They even held a drink if you're up on the ladder.
Now think about that. Is that Andy? Not last session, but two sessions back, you talked about why you would want to have customers involved.
Yes.
And so let's assume that they followed our prescription, your prescription, and that is get something that's good enough out now.
Yes.
So people are buying it, then work closely with those customers and then customize. And so the second generation is something like this that, you know, I bet you had a radio embedded in it.
Oh, yeah.
It probably would have had a radio embedded, right?
Yeah, and I haven't really seen a competitor come out to compete with them. So, but if there were, these additional features would outrank whatever the competitor
That's right.
had.
That's right. Or now they would be copying. So the question would be, for the latter company, are they working on the third gen?
That's true.
Because they should be working on it right now.
Exactly.
You know, and it's the HP mindset of make your own stuff obsolete. Do not allow the competition to do that. Because if you're making it obsolete, what that really means is the new product is rolling through the system.
Right. And basically, when do you start that? When you release the present product, you start on the new.
Amen. You put it in front of your customers, and
That's
you listen
right.
closely, and you go, what else do we need to do?
Right. So, you know, once this market leadership is established, one can concentrate on future product extensions that we're talking about here. And let's look at a few that happened in the past. You know, originally, years ago, they developed bottled water because most people said, who's going to have bottled water? And it was basically in five-gallon containers that
Right.
you would have in offices. And you would have a dispenser there. Well, then all of a sudden, we went from that to we're now into individual bottles of water. And it created a plastic industry. Well, from that, we recycle, which has now created taking those plastic bottles and converting them into, I think, nylon.
Yep.
And you use the nylon for making various types of materials.
You can actually use the nylon to if you add graphite to it, turn it into Kevlar.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, if we look at what IBM did, they were not the first in the PC business.
No.
They let everybody else develop it. They came in, and because they had such a large customer base, it made it very feasible for them to sell PCs and make it. And then eventually they said, you know, we're changing our business model, and they
yep.
sold it out.
And now the Chinese make them.
Volvo, you know, is known especially for its safety and airbags, and they always showed you
Yep.
jamming into the wall. Well, now I just saw a commercial where, because of new technology, you see it coming to jam in the wall, and all of a sudden the brakes go on automatically. So they have gone to the next level. So now you don't have that possibility of even crashing. They hopefully mm-hmm. will stop that from happening. And if by some chance somebody runs into you in the airbags, they still are there to protect you. And I saw on a commercial yesterday, well, actually it was Fox, where Amazon now in New York City has come out, order something on their phone, and they will deliver, guaranteed delivery in 1 hour.
Off their phone.
And that was just amazing.
1 hour delivery.
Yeah. So, you know, we have just a new distribution system in the Richmond area. So who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe we can get it
yeah,
here.
Yeah, maybe Richmond will be the hour.
Yeah. So, thus, in closing, being the first to introduce new products or services to the marketplace really sets a firm up to be a market leader, or it experiences a huge failure. And the key to this being successful is to provide items that the market wants to use and have good, solid marketing research. Establishing one as a forefront leader with super customer service will create a very strong relationship with customers for all future products and services, and an open door for future growth and invention is there.
Yeah, we're not recommending that every company out there become the market leader in terms of product launch.
No.
Because it's a tough thing to do. But if you become that, you have a distinct advantage in the marketplace because you don't have to convince people to buy your stuff because of your previous track record, where a lot of times you bring out new things and people are somewhat hesitant. Number two is you get all that free publicity, and your offer becomes a cult. I mean, Apple is a cult. I mean, if you're an Apple user, you wouldn't do anything other than use Apple. What type of market, you know, what type of product loyalty is that? I mean, you would just love to have somebody do that. And every one of us are influenced. Like, for example, myself, if I'm in Florida, I only shop in public stores. Now, it's a food store, big deal. Well, it's kind of like Richmond in the old days with U-Crops. Only in Florida, there's Publix and there's everybody else. And I'll go a long way out of the way, go to Publix.
Mm-hmm.
And so that type of loyalty, one of the ways that you get it is by being first in the marketplace. So, well, thanks, Andy.
Well, you're quite welcome.
I think if you review, if you go through and you look at Andy's last six sessions, what you will get from that is how can you take the development of new products and services and do two things. One is turn out really good stuff, and two, become the leader in your industry or niche at doing that. And when I say niche, it could be you're the best in Richmond.
Right.
Okay. So with that, thanks, Andy. Looking forward to a great Christmas.
Yes. And I wish everybody that's listening a very Merry Christmas.
Okay. Thank you. And we'll be back.
Thank you.
Hi, Mike Carroll of Sandler Training here in Richmond. Do you know the three most commonly made sales mistakes? Are you or your salespeople at fault? Visit focusbusiness.sandler.com to download your free report, the three biggest sales mistakes you should never make. In this report, discover these unproductive sales strategies and what to do about them. Finally, take the pressure out of selling and reach your desired sales result. Visit focusbusiness.sandler.com to download your copy now.
Hello, this is William Eastman, your host for Richmond Biz Live on WLEE 990 AM. You know, when I prepare for my segment, Owner as Executive, I am acutely aware that this is the number one obstacle to business growth. So, why don't you make an appointment with me to help you grow with your business? It will be the best 10 minutes of your week. And we're back. This is Richmond Biz Live, richmondbizlive.com. And you can reach us either by going to the website and clicking the watch button, and you can catch us over the video cam, or you can click the listen button. You can stream us. Obviously, if you're listening to this, there's no need to do that. Or number three is you can join. And the way to join is to dial us up toll free, 844-249-5483. That's 844-249-5483 or 844-BIZLIVE. Okay, our last session, our last session of this part of the season is now. And Ben Meredith is back with us, one of the pioneers of sales automation. I mean, we're talking...
You can tell by the arrows in your back, Bill.
Well, we can also tell by your pedigree and how much you've done. And Ben and Mike Carroll, Mike from Focus Business Sandler, have been alternating, you know, weeks, just depending upon what's going on. Right now, Mike's pretty busy, but... I asked Ben to really take a totally different approach here, is that we've talked about how to fix your business, and we've talked about how to do it incrementally, and we've done it. This is show 38. Well, you go over three seasons, we've talked about it. And I asked Ben to do something different. I said, Ben, what if the business owner said, okay, I'm going to start with a clean slate, absolute clean slate. What would I do?
What would I do?
I'm going to do it right from the very beginning. I'm not going to fix anything. I'm just going to do it right from the beginning. What would that look like? And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to our pioneer of sales.
I think you cheated just a little bit because I was at Focus Business with Mike Carroll this morning.
Yeah.
I said, Mike, if you were going to start all over again, what would you do? And being the consummate salesperson, he said, first of all, you develop your strategy. We all know that. We had to get a strategy in place. And then select your... what do you call this sweet spot customer?
Right.
These are the customers that actually have a problem that we can solve, and they're willing to pay for it and can afford it. Number two, decide how you want to go to market. And number three, develop behaviors and attitudes to execute on that. And of course, you know, Mike is all about this, getting the structure in place, the strategy and the structure, and building out his staff with the proper skill sets. And that kind of mirrors a little bit of what the second thing that I did this morning was go to Google. Google is always our best friend. What would I do if I were starting my business all over again? And these actually hit a lot of the things that I came up with that I shared with you early this week. Is hire a bookkeeper accountant day one. Start lean. And I never, I take a little bit of issue with that because I think you need to have some expenditures and commitments up front. But be a little bit frugal. Don't spend everything.
I think frugal is the good word. Is that frugal, you spend the money that you should spend.
Yes.
And no monuments. We're not going to buy a $1,000 chair.
Yes, but we don't want to have to sit on a crate either.
Okay, yeah, okay, someplace in between. Yeah.
One odd one was don't listen to salespeople. Listen to your friends and business associates and acquaintances, people you trust. Don't take on bad customers. That's a whole show by itself, right?
I think we've done a couple of shows on how to do a butt something or other extraction.
Something like
bad
that.
Bad customers.
You should get rid of 10% a year anyway. And build a team of advisors, of course.
Okay.
So a couple of things that I always start with is build strategic relationships.
Right.
You need to have those up front. Get a team of advisors that you can work with. And that basically outside board of advisors or board of directors. They don't necessarily have to agree with you. They just have to tell the truth.
That's right.
So when you're going off base,
and that's really what you need is people who have been there and know what they're talking about, and they nicely tell you the truth, so your defenses don't go up and you don't hear them. But on the other hand, you hired them to be truthful, and you got to pay attention.
You should pay attention. Invest in training. Everybody that you bring on board should go through a training continually. And if you have a position that you're trying to fill that doesn't require any training, you probably don't need that position.
Okay.
But you need to invest in training from management all the way down, particularly the sales reps, anybody who touches a customer or a prospect. And that's where Mike really shines in a lot of what he does. Invest in technology right up front.
Yeah.
Now, some people of maybe our generation don't get to that as quickly as they should. Unless you're running a bank or a financial institution where you've really got an issue that you have to keep everything inside, get on the cloud. I guess can we still call it the cloud? I mean, it's been here 10 years almost.
Well, what would you call it if you were selling it to me?
I'd call it the thing you have to have.
Okay.
Which is pretty close. Yeah.
Okay.
Get mobile, get on the cloud, be able to run your business virtual if you have to. If you have to have everybody come into your office, have a physical place of business, if there happens to be a fire or some catastrophe happens, you need to continue operating.
So be able to run your business from your smartphone, regardless of the make.
Yeah. I know all the Paneras and Starbucks will be filled when that happens. But that's what we do.
Okay.
Invest in technology. Measure everything that you can possibly measure in your business. I mean, don't go crazy about it. You should be able to have the technology you've already adopted that is going to give you the metrics that are going to help you drive your business, and more importantly, show where the weak spots are. Pick your accounting systems, pick your CRM systems, anything else that's going to be running a shop floor, or anything within the office. It's going to give you some metrics, and those you want to be paying attention to. And don't be looking at spreadsheets. It takes too much time.
Okay.
It's like scanning the newspaper from top to bottom.
Yeah, become a spreadsheet-driven company, which right now I'm trying to work on. That's why you and I have been talking about building a BI for that my client where I'm VP, because everything's done in spreadsheets, and you got to read all the spreadsheets.
Give me a dashboard.
They don't talk to each other.
Give me a dashboard. Give me business alerts.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to know that if somebody closed a big deal. I think that's great if they go ahead and sales rep goes ahead and closes a great big deal. What I'd like to know is he closes that great big deal, and I don't have the inventory to deliver it.
That's right.
So that's the alert that I want.
Okay.
So, and then there's a number of companies that have products that actually deliver that. So.
Okay.
one thing that I would suggest for everybody, if they don't already have it, get a copy of Michael Gerber's E-Myth.
Yeah.
If you can, try to find the original one. They've kind of like a cottage industry for everything from, well, every profession has an E-Myth book.
Yep.
Get one of the original ones from back in the 80s.
Yeah, I agree.
That will help really put your business in place. Part of that goes back to the training issue that I mentioned earlier.
Right.
That if you have a position, you've already planned for it, when you're going to fill it, at mm-hmm. what time you're going to fill it, and who they're going to report to, and what training, what skill sets they need at that point.
Okay.
Let's see. What can we find? One last thing that I would recommend to everybody. Don't do it yourself. This goes back to the lean part we'd mentioned
right.
earlier, lean and frugal. Don't try to do all this yourself. Get those board of advisors. Get people you really trust. And you just don't try to be the hero and run that entire business yourself. You can't do it. We like to think we can, but you need to have the confidence in yourself that you look outside and bring people in who can really, really help drive that business forward.
Yeah, because actually it'll be cheaper if you do that, because perhaps you will launch on time. You will develop the product on time. You will, you know, I know from trying to do everything is that I'm way behind.
You've done this a couple of times.
I've done that. I've been on this rodeo more than once. That's why I didn't get back last night from, Wednesday from Salem. I'm trying to get this new system in place, and apparently I'm the only one doing it. Well,
welcome to my world.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, thanks, Ben.
Thank you.
I thought really it would be a good note to close on to say, okay, if we started from scratch, you had a clean slate, what would you do? And so with that, I appreciate that. And just some last thoughts here as we approach Hanukkah. I think we're in Hanukkah already.
Hanukkah was yesterday?
You got 7 days, so I think we
started.
Yeah, I think we're in Hanukkah, and we have Christmas coming up next week. And that is for all you business owners out there to take some time off, spend some time with your family. And more than anything else, you need the time to refresh. You need a chance to sit and look at your business. And I find that probably the most valuable thing I have is when I don't have anything to do and I look at the company and go, gee, what should I be doing? What's the one thing that would make a huge difference in how this business is run? But I think given the themes that we've had today, what I want to say to you is that there is no reason in the world why you couldn't be one of those billion-dollar success stories that we studied 15 years ago that we developed our model on, business growth. No reason for it. It's a very predictable process, and if you manage that process, you can get there. And in fact, the first three seasons of this show have been about that. Now, next week, we'll have Mark Deutsch and Rick Grossman are going to be in. It's going to be recorded because the studios are closed on the day after Christmas. So this is our last live show. They'll be talking about buying and selling a business, and I will see you in January for season 4.
This is William Eastman, your host for a revolutionary new approach to small business success, Richmond Biz Live on WLEE News Talk 990 AM. You can start by checking out our website at richmondbizlive.com and download your program schedule. You'll find it in the resources section. 1 hour of information, techniques, and tools that you can use to achieve your dream. Clear your calendar for the most important hour in your week.